Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a Kedsource family production. In this episode, we're going to talk about racing for orphans with Down syndrome, getting caught up in a cause, and reading. Our guest today is Brady Murray, CEO of Mass Mutual Intermountain West and founder of Rods Racing. Brady lives in Salt Lake City, Utah with his wife and five children. Brady's company, Mass Mutual Intermountain West, is a financial planning firm that puts families first. In many businesses, that is corporate speak, but Brady leads his firm by living it, and he carries this on with his ultimate cause, finding homes for orphans with Down syndrome. In full disclosure, Brady is a longtime client of ours. We assist Brady with his content creation, social media, and website. We are grateful to associate ourselves with such an inspiring and successful person, and we get to see the good he does on a daily basis. Brady brings perspective of an incredible leader with the ultimate positive mindset. His story is one for the ages, and without delaying it anymore, let's get right into the conversation with Brady Murray. Brady, welcome to the Entrepreneur Perspectives Podcast. It's great to have you.
Great to be here, Eric.
We're going to start with questions requiring a more thoughtful response and end with a round of rapid-fire questions. You ready to get going?
You got it.
All right. So what do you tell the young, frustrated financial advisor that has shown you hard work but is having a hard time getting to the next level?
Yeah, that's a great question. I get that question often. It's a question that I deal with almost weekly. The principle behind it, everything when it comes to these ideas really are principle-based, and the principle behind it is this concept, this core belief of mine, that is the person you become is determined by the books you read and the people you surround yourself with. And so if I'm a brand new financial advisor, I ask myself two questions. Number one, who do I spend my time with at the office, and who do I look to as a mentor? Oftentimes I find that advisors that are brand new, that are struggling, are associating with other struggling financial advisors, believe it or not. And that's who they go to lunch with, and that's who they talk with, and that's who they hang out with at the office. And so a simple change in being able to surround yourself with those that are succeeding, that will be a big help. The second thing that I had referenced was in as it regards to reading books. What books are they reading? And I find that new financial planners are actually not investing a lot of time in themselves. I'm not suggesting that they read financial planning books necessarily, but I would suggest that they read inspiring books, books that are going to give them ideas or that are going to create ideas that are going to inspire greatness.
I like that, because a lot of times you hear people just talk about, you know, the people to call on, the activity, which is all, of course, all of that is important, right, Brady? But you're kind of going more at the core of it as to who you're surrounding yourself with in the books that you read. So it's a little bit of a different philosophy than I think you would hear a lot of managers bring to the table on that type of question.
Yeah, no question. If you're motivated, if you're inspired, if you see greatness and you have a vision on how to obtain that greatness, it's very simple to pick up the phone and start calling on those prospects.
Yeah, and we've heard that line a lot, and I think that you bring to the table of the person you surround yourself, the people that you surround yourself with and the books that you read, and I think it sticks with us. I know we live that, and I think what you're trying to do is get your young advisors, and not just your young advisors, anyone that's in your network of people that you deal with, thinking that same way, and we think that's pretty awesome. It's a big reason why you're on the call today and why we've continued to work together for so long. So you heard the intro about you, but I can't do you justice in one opening statement. So tell us something real about you that the audience doesn't know.
So this is my claim to fame, and a lot of people don't realize this, but there was a really popular pop culture movie back, 10 or 15 years ago that was called Napoleon Dynamite. And I think most individuals have actually seen that movie. And the setting is in a small Idaho town where there's just this unique kid that grew up there. The unique thing about that movie is it's actually not a fictional movie. That is a documentary of my senior year of high school. And so I actually grew up in Preston, Idaho, and I was there when this whole idea of Napoleon Dynamite was created. It was actually the director that I grew up with, and like I say, that movie was a documentary in my senior year of high school. So that's one of my claim to fames. And another thing that I'm passionate about that a lot of people don't realize is I'm a huge outdoors guy. I love to fish and I love to hunt and I love to be outside. And so hence one of the reasons why I like living in Utah.
Yeah, that's amazing. I had no idea about the Napoleon Dynamite. So when did you know that that was actually going to happen?
So what's unique about that is when I was actually in high school, literally Jared moved in when he was a sophomore and was just a unique kid, like kind of a weird kid, wore moon boots to school all the time and was big into karate and nunchucks, and his best friend was this Spanish kid named Sam Espinosa, great, great guy. And literally Jared ran for student body president and won simply because of an amazing skit that he did in the senior assembly. And so it was like 8-9 years later, that movie came out and I went to the movie theater and watched it. And like halfway through, I'm like, I know where this movie's going. I know what's going to happen on this. This is a movie about the life of Jared Hess that I witnessed all growing up.
That's amazing.
Pretty awesome.
It is awesome. Yeah. That is awesome. Yeah, I did not expect, and I don't think the audience knew that one, but now they do. That's very cool. Very cool. So as we talked about in the intro, the RODS organization, Racing for Orphans with Down Syndrome, obviously that's very close to your heart. How did that come to be?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of people don't realize this, but the year was 2011, I was at that point in my career, I felt like I was a little bit capped. I didn't have a lot of room for growth. And quite frankly, I was struggling a little bit in relation to just feeling like I was not meeting my fullest potential. And I was looking for something to be able to help me to grow and to develop as a person and to be able to give back. And for the entire year, I was seeking that out. And a principle that I believe is that which you desire most, you will always get. And I believe that it was divine intervention. I believe that it was inspiration that came that allowed me to have that idea to be able to start RODS, which actually came at the end of 2011. The inspiration for RODS really stems to my son. And I have a 10-year-old son. His name is Nash. And when Nash was born, we found out that Nash has Down syndrome. And so we've been very active in the Down syndrome community throughout Nash's entire 10 years. At that time, I think Nash was around 5, if I'm not mistaken. And we were very active in the Down syndrome community. It was through being active in the Down syndrome community that we found out that there are many cultures and many countries that when a child is born that has special needs, that child is given up for adoption and that they're immediately placed into an orphanage. And so in 2011, the end of that year, is when I found this out. And I found out that these children were in these orphanages, and in many cases they were dying because of the extreme circumstances, because of the lack of love and the nutrition, as well as the medical services that were required for these children. And I saw these kids that are 4 and 5 years old that were just absolutely, just couldn't hardly walk and just in extreme circumstances. And I thought, this is what I've been looking for. All this year, I've been asking and hoping to have something like this come about, and this is exactly what we were going to do. And so it was a very strong, strong feeling when I saw that, and I knew that that was something that I was going to pursue. So that's how it got started.
That's amazing. So when you came to the idea of starting with RODS, had this been something you had been thinking out beforehand, or was this like the aha moment?
It was. Literally, it was an aha moment. And so I'll never forget it. I was laying in bed. It was early one Sunday morning. As I said, for months, I had just been like pondering and seeking out and trying to find something that would allow me to use talents and abilities that I'd been entrusted with to be able to help somebody, to be able to do something good for somebody. And I had no idea, right? I had no idea that this is what it was going to be. But that Sunday morning, I was just laying in bed, and literally it was like the light turned on. And I reflected back to having learned about these children in these orphanages I think it was a month or two earlier. I reflected on just my relationship with my son, and it was like big time power. Like, this is going to happen. Let's go build something that's going to help these kids.
Yeah, and you've done just that. I mean, we've witnessed it with working with you, working with Rods on social media, and it's an amazing thing to see. So now as you are in Rods and you've been doing this for a while now and you continue to grow it, what is your ultimate goal for Rods?
It's a good question, and I've been very clear about this since the first day that we started it. The goal of Rods is to be able to find a home for every single child that has Down syndrome that is in an orphanage right now. And there's a lot of them out there, and we've helped some of them so far. We've got a lot of work to do, but that's the end game. And fortunately, I'm 39 years old right now and hopefully have a lot of life, and I'm going to dedicate the rest of my life to be able to do that.
How do you go about finding homes for orphans with Down syndrome?
Yeah. Yep. And so when that idea came of let's help these kids, it was a little bit overwhelming because I had no idea how we were going to help these kids. So I started to research it, and I thought, you know, like, I don't know if there's anybody out there that's going to volunteer to be able to bring a family or bring a child with special needs into their home, right, through adoption. That's not something that people typically go and do every single day. And so I started to research it, and I immediately found that there are a lot of families that want to adopt these children. The only thing that was standing in their way of being able to do it is just simply the financial means to be able to adopt internationally. On average, it costs between $30,000 and $40,000 to adopt these kids. And I thought, you know what? If money is the only thing standing in the way of these kids being able to get adopted, we can find a way to be able to raise funds to raise adoption grants for them. So that was the strategy. I wasn't sure if it was going to work, but that was the strategy of, hey, let's go try and raise, let's say, half of an adoption grant for a child, and let's see what happens. And so it was Christmas at that time, so it was December of that year, and 2011, and my wife and I went, there's a wonderful organization called Reese's Rainbow that have these children that are available for adoption listed on their website. And so Andrew and I went to this website and started looking through these children and picked one child that we wanted to fundraise for. His name was Eli, or is Eli. He was in Lithuania. He was 4 years old. He'd been in that orphanage for his entire life. We found out that there had not been a single inquiry about Eli for 4 years that he had been there. Nobody had ever asked about potentially adopting him, and we started to fundraise. I learned another principle that month when we started to fundraise, and that principle is that if you allow yourself to get caught up in a cause that's bigger than yourself, that you'll witness miracles. That month, we witnessed a miracle. In 30 days, we raised $20,000 for Eli. And then I witnessed another miracle after that. Within 30 days after raising that money, a family came forward and committed to adopt Eli. And so you think about that. Like, he'd been available to be adopted for 4 years. Nobody had ever asked. You help bridge the gap with the finances of getting a family to be able to adopt. And within 30 days, that little guy had a family. And so that was the idea behind it, and that's kind of what started it. And we're like, holy cow, it works. Let's go raise some more money. Right. That's how we got started.
Yeah. Now, you personally were involved with an adoption of a child, correct?
Yeah, we did. That was a special experience as well. We, you know, our intention of starting Rods and being able to help these children get adopted was never to actually adopt a child ourselves. We love Nash. He's amazing. But there's also a lot of work that's involved with having a special needs child. And that just wasn't our plan. So for years, we facilitated and helped others to be able to adopt. It was in the spring of 2016, so it was last year, that my wife and I were just thinking, and ironically enough, had some of those similar feelings that maybe we had in 2011, of like, you know what, I think we can do more, and I think we can help more. And the idea came to our mind of, well, what if we adopted a child, and what if we adopted a child with special needs? And honestly, when we first had that thought come to our mind, that was hard. Like, that wasn't something that we necessarily wanted to sign up for. But as we allowed our hearts to be open to it, our hearts were softened, and we thought, you know what, we can do this. And so we adopted Cooper that year, and he's been amazing. Like, I can't imagine my life without him now.
Yeah, and you see the images that you have, the pictures that you have on your social media, and you could just see the love that your family has with Nash, with Cooper, with all your kids. It's amazing to see. And obviously, you've involved yourself with a cause, and you touched on this before, and I know you touch on this with those that you lead, but why do you feel involving yourself with a cause is so important?
So I believe, and this is something that I learned from a mentor, but I believe that we are all entrusted with talents and resources, and that we are temporary stewards of these talents and resources. And I believe that someday we'll all be given the opportunity to be able to be held accountable for what we did with those. And I want to make my life count, and I want to make my life count to be able to bless the lives and help the lives of other people. And so by allowing ourselves to get caught up in a cause that's not about us, it allows us to be able to experience those miracles and ultimately bless the lives of other people.
Okay. And so you present these ideas to people that you work with. And what's the reaction when you speak at an event, or when you're telling, let's say, the young advisor and what they should be thinking about and getting caught up in a cause? What's typically the reaction to it? I know what our reaction is, or what my reaction is to it. How do other people respond to that?
Yeah. By and large, people are good. By and large, people have a lot of good inside of them. And when they hear truth, when somebody speaks truth, it will speak to them. It speaks to inside, right? You can feel it inside. And so when somebody hears this idea of getting caught up in a cause, it speaks to them. And by and large, people want to respond to that. Now, not everybody follows those impressions that they receive or those feelings that they receive, but those that do, it's a principle. It's a law. Those that do will witness miracles themselves. And I've seen it. I've seen it in Rod's. I've seen it as a financial planner and in mentoring financial planners. I've seen it in my own life as a dad and as a husband. It's a principle. It never changes. It's timeless. And those people that follow it will reap the benefits and the fruits that come from it.
Yeah, and so you're bringing awareness to Rod's, which is racing for orphans with Down syndrome. Let's talk about the racing aspect of it. I'm assuming that's where you are bringing the awareness to it. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this was another miracle in and of itself. So I grew up, as you know, in Preston, Idaho. And so one of the great things about living in Preston, Idaho is everybody gets to play football, basketball, and baseball, because they need those. They need everybody to play so they can field a team. And so I was. I loved athletics. I loved sports. Loved all of those sports. But the racing side of it was never something that I grew up with. Meaning that the only time I would ever run would be like to first base. And then if I hit the ball to the outfield, I might run to second too.
Yeah.
And the only time the coach made us run is when we did something bad. And so this idea of like actually going and running Ironmans and endurance sports for fun was kind of a foreign concept. I actually, when I moved up to Boise after graduating from Utah State, that's kind of when I stopped playing baseball, got up there, and I felt like I wanted to do something more athletically, right? And so I actually had a friend that was doing triathlons, and so I considered it. And so I tried a triathlon, you know, one of those little ones that you kind of swim in a pool and you ride your bike around the block and then you run to the end of the street type of a thing.
Yeah.
And I did it, and it was kind of fun. And this idea came into my mind of, you know what, like maybe I could do an Ironman triathlon. And this was all before Rod's. And so I signed up for a half Ironman and actually went and did that race. And literally it almost killed me. But like at the end of the day, it was like, put an IV in me, take me to the hospital. Like, I hope I can walk again someday.
Yeah.
And I knew I was never going to complete an Ironman triathlon after that one. But the reality is if I'm totally honest, like the reason why I started in endurance sports when I moved to Boise was, and why I wanted to do an Ironman at that time was like, I wanted to put an Ironman sticker in the back of my truck, and I wanted to wear a finisher's t-shirt, and I wanted to be able to just simply say I'm an Ironman. It was very self-motivated. It was inward motivated. It was all about me. And that's why I almost died just trying to do a half Ironman. And so you go back to that time when we fundraised for Eli, and we saw what happened for Eli. And we were thinking about ways to be able to fundraise more and to be able to help more kids. And my wife came to me and she said, hey, you know, you've always wanted to do an Ironman triathlon. Why don't you do one for these kids? And so, you know, thinking of it in that aspect, you know, it wasn't about the sticker in my truck anymore, and it wasn't about saying I was an Ironman. It was about saving a life. And so I thought to myself at that time, you know what, if doing an Ironman means that one of these kids gets saved, I'm going to do an Ironman. And so it goes back to that principle of allowing yourself to get caught up in a cause that's bigger than yourself and witnessing miracles along the way. And so this was early 2012, and I started to train and started to actually get into shape. And my training was different. It was a training with purpose. And about the time that I felt like, you know what, I could probably pull one of these off, I witnessed another miracle. You see, I had been advertising about Rods and trying to get my story out there about what we were doing to try and save these kids. And I got a random phone call in the middle of the summer that year, and it was from a gentleman by the name of Rob White. And Rob said, Brady, you don't know me, but I know you. I know of your story. He said, we have a lot in common. He said, I have a son with Down syndrome, and I'm an Ironman finisher. I'm an Ironman triathlete, and I know you want to be an Ironman triathlete. And never forget it. He said, Brady, I want to help you with this cause, and I want to help these kids. And he said, I want to invite you to come and race in the Ironman World Championship, and we're going to arrange to have your story featured on the 2012 Ironman NBC broadcast. He said, we're going to tell the world your story. And I thought, like, who are you? And come to find out, he was the CEO of the presenting sponsor of that year's Ironman. So he had some say on who was going to be featured in that broadcast, and he chose me. And
wow.
So I continued to train, and I went to Kona, and I completed an Ironman and did it. It actually felt pretty good. It felt a lot better than the half Ironman. And they featured our story on NBC, and that's really where Rods took off. That's where it blew up.
Yeah. So what's the best way people can contribute to Rods today?
Good question. Easiest and most simple way is just simply to go to our website. It's rods.org, R-O-D-S.org. Right on the main page, there's a big donate button. When you donate, you're going to see what child you're donating to. The principle of ours is that we race for one child at a time. We help one child at a time, and when we raise the funding for that child, we'll move on to another child. But everything that somebody donates at this stage in the game is going to go to that child.
And you also feature racers as well. So people will come around and they'll say, I want to race, and I want to race for this child, and I want to help generate money, right? And you guys travel,
yeah,
or you have different races around the country, but
yeah,
anyone can race. Tell me about that. How can someone get involved in that aspect?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We have hundreds, literally have hundreds of athletes that are all the way from athletes saying, hey, I'd like to try a 5K. I've never actually done anything like this before, to we've had professional triathletes race for us in the past. And so everywhere in between. But those athletes can go and sign up on our website. And the commitment that we ask is for every race that they do, they simply match their entry fees by way of a donation to the Rods Orphan that they fundraise. And that's one of the ways that we're able to help these kids.
And they wear the gear, correct? So they would wear the Rods gear. They can promote it on social media, and it just gets out there.
Yep. All of our athletes are running in Rods gear. We have a lot of races that we do throughout, or that we'll participate in, that are throughout the United States. Our biggest events are actually in conjunction with Run Disney. So down in Florida, we'll do two or three, sometimes four different races a year, where we'll have our athletes that want to be part of Rods and fundraise for Rods will go and participate in the Run Disney events, which are huge, which are amazing. I don't know if you've ever seen those, but they're incredible. There's, 30,000 runners that are participating in these, and you get to run through the parks, and it's pretty awesome.
Well, we've seen your documentation of this. We've seen the pictures. We've seen, it just looks like this massive event. So all of this is an incredible undertaking. I'm going to get to my point in a second. As you know, we have a content platform called Sportspreneur. We talk about business, create analogies between sports and entrepreneurship. We also talk about just business and life. And we had an article on there, and we're big on this, and you and I have talked about this, but the popularity of productivity means time is more important than ever. So simply put, we love to talk about the importance of time in business. And after all these conversations we had, financial planning, a large family, you run this organization, Rods, as someone that has all that, how do you stay productive in not just doing all these things, but actually having success in all these things? How do you stay productive in all these areas?
Yeah, that's a great question. What I find, and back to this principle of we're all entrusted with certain resources, one of those resources is time, as you know. And so the way that I've been able to find balance and being able to try and be a great dad and a great husband and a good business owner and run a nonprofit and train for marathons and everything else is a very simple principle. I go to bed really early and I get up really early. And I find that if I go to bed early, and when I say early, I'm in bed, typically by about 9 to 9:30, I'll be asleep. If I go any past that, I get a little grumpy. And I wake up every morning at 4:56. And so when I wake up at that time, I spend the first hour of the day and I will read. And I will read inspiring literature. And I will ponder and I will think about all of those things that I'm thankful for. And I think about my kids and I think about Andrea and I think of ways that I could be a better dad and I can be a better husband for those guys. And I think about ways that I can serve and be able to help others. And during that first hour, it's inspiring. It's amazing to see the ideas that come. And it's amazing to actually see the ideas that come that are professionally related on how to be a better businessman. But those ideas come when you put forth that effort in the wee hours of the early morning. By 6, I start exercising. And right now, my big focus is marathons. And so I run. And I'll listen to books when I run, and I'll do that for typically anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes a day. And then I get ready, and I send my kids off to school, and I go to work, and I kiss Andrea goodbye for the day, and I go to work. And it's amazing what the day is like when I start my day that way, and it makes everything else better. I get home typically around 6 o'clock and we have family dinner and we spend time together as a family that evening and try and do something productive. One thing I learned from my wife is TV is not the highest and best use of time. So we actually don't have TV. And that was kind of weird for me at first, but for the last decade plus, we don't have cable or any TV shows or anything that we watch, but we spend time together as a family. The one exception is I do watch college football and I do watch the World Series.
Yeah,
that's the one thing I don't make an exception.
You got to dabble.
I do make an exception for you.
Yeah, you have to dabble somewhere. So
that's right. That's
how,
right.
How easy was it to make that transition?
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was brutal.
You just didn't wake up one day at 4:56 and say, "I'm going after it," right?
No, like. I was always that guy that we get the kids to bed and I'd grab a bowl of ice cream and sit up looking at my phone or doing something else and go to bed around 11:30 and get up at 6:45 to try and make it into the office on time. And that's kind of how I rolled. And so, you know, making that change was a big, big change. And it took a lot of heavy lifting in the beginning, but I knew why I wanted to make it. And so that made it a little easier.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's what you were saying before. If you have an idea of where you're going, then you can apply yourself to whatever you need to get that thing done. So obviously you talk a lot about planning. You have a career in financial planning. We've talked about this. I know you talk to a lot of people about it. It's a career that comes under a lot of scrutiny. There's a lot of misnomers out there, but why would you tell someone to get into a career in financial planning?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's a great question as well. First and foremost, I would say that most people shouldn't get into financial planning. It's a difficult business, and most people are not cut out to be able to go through the grind of what it is in starting as a financial planner. But there are people out there that are absolutely selling themselves short by not being part of this incredible industry. And, you know, the ideas and the reasons why I would say that is, there's a lot of them, but the first and foremost is I'm in a career that is cause-oriented. We bless the lives and change the lives of those clients that we work with. And the relationship that I have with these clients and that we have as a firm with our clients is life-altering. It's special. It's very, very unique. And in many cases, when one of our clients experiences a difficult life experience, such as the loss of a loved one or a potential job change or a layoff, in many cases, we are one of the first people that they call simply because of the role that we play in that. And so that's a special thing. Another aspect of this that I love about financial planning is you have complete autonomy of your schedule and of your life, that literally you call the shots on when you come to the office and when you leave the office. And I always use this as an example. My first year as a financial planner, I decided to take the entire month of December off and go to Peru with my wife. And so we did. And I didn't ask a single person if I could do that. I didn't have to ask my boss for time off. I just planned it, made arrangements, and we did it. And so that's a great thing. The third thing that I would say is just simply the financial potential that comes with financial planning. Our financial planners here in Salt Lake City are making a great, great income. We have financial planners that are making a high six-figure, low seven-figure income living in Salt Lake City, and that have a wonderful lifestyle and a great life overall. So those are a few of the reasons why I think somebody that is made for it at least should consider financial planning.
Well, I think that's important that you qualify that because it's not for everybody. And just like a lot of careers aren't for everybody, if you can be self-aware and understand what you're getting into, there's incredible upside, like you're saying, not just financially, but you know, emotionally and just overall
that's
with
right.
your life. And I think you nail that. So we talk a lot about business development, and what's crazy is you and I originally met on Twitter, and you've met many people through LinkedIn and Facebook that ended up working at your firm. So what's your take on the current state of the internet as it relates to business development?
You know, I would say this is old news when I give my current take, but for any professional that is looking to exceed their potential and be able to realize their full measure of their potential, they have to have a presence. Let me put it this way. Everybody has a presence on the internet, and you decide what presence you want. If I go and Google your name and I don't find anything, guess what? You have a very horrible reputation, and I shouldn't say reputation, but you have a very poor presence on the internet, and that's a negative in my opinion. And so I believe that individuals that are serious about business and serious about being successful need to take very serious, or have a very serious focus on having a presence online, whether that is through social media applications or otherwise.
Yeah, do you think the financial services industry as a whole, and this is generally speaking, do you think they're where they need to be as it comes to having a presence online?
Yeah, not even close. And I love my company that I get to work for and be a part of. They're fantastic, but they know my feelings towards this, and the financial industry as a whole is archaic. And I understand why there's a lot of regulations and there's a lot of reasons why they can't completely embrace the platforms that are available. But yeah, financial services is one that's way behind the times, which the way I look at it is it creates tremendous opportunity for disruption, where there's a lot of industries that have already been disrupted and that are light years ahead of financial services. Within my industry, it has not been disrupted yet. And so there's opportunity there.
Yeah, no, I would agree completely. I think it's starting. I think there's a lot of people throwing large sums of money at creating no disruption in the financial services and, you know, social media and network marketing. But you're right, you know, there's a lot of rules around it, and it makes people uneasy, which I understand as well. It's something that people don't want to buck that trend. I think you live a different lifestyle where you're going to make some things happen and make your statements, as you said, known for it. You know, but it goes back to this, you know, first of all, you sharing your story with us on this podcast, spending the time to do so, it means a lot to us, and we love hearing it. You have an incredible story. We are blessed to be a part of your story and to help out where we can and to be business partners in a way with you. And then even going into the social media aspect, you know, a lot of people who could downplay, let's say, pick a platform of social media, let's say it is Twitter, and say, well, I don't understand what it could do for me. Well, I would just say, listen to this podcast, because you and I don't meet if it's not for Twitter. And so I think that's the most important thing to take away from that part of it. But more than anything else, it's your incredible story that you're sharing here today, and the passion that you have towards it and where you've taken it to more than anything else. So you had this passion, but then you actually did something with it and dedicated your life to it and dedicate your day to it, and it motivates you to do incredible things. We're just happy to be a part of it and continue to watch what you do, and we'll continue to watch what you do. So thank you for spending that time to do that.
No, I appreciate you, Eric. You guys have been incredible. I feel very fortunate that we were able to have our paths cross through Twitter back in, I think it was May of 2016, if I'm not mistaken, and it's been amazing to see what's been able to take place since then.
Absolutely. Don't go anywhere, because we are going into some rapid-fire questions right after this message. We would like to take a quick moment to tell you about an organization we work closely with called RODS, which stands for Racing for Orphans with Down Syndrome. We are a proud supporter of RODS Racing. The RODS mission is to nurture a positive image of Down Syndrome, to promote awareness for the adoption of orphans with Down Syndrome, and by participating in organized athletic races and awareness events. Ultimately, the goal is to find homes for all orphans with Down Syndrome. Because of our relationship with the founder of RODS, Brady Murray, we are honored to be able to contribute our work in the area of marketing to create even more awareness around RODS and their mission. You can learn more about RODS at RODS.org. Well, that is the first round of the questions. So we've touched on a lot of topics, some of them emotional, some of them very important. And now we want to go into a little bit more of a rapid fire round. You ready to get going on that?
Let's do it.
All right. So you talked about some books already. You didn't talk about books. You talked about how you read a lot. So what book are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm actually reading Give and Take by, I believe it's Adam Grant.
Now, are you doing that through Audible or another form?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I am reading that one through Audible. There are some books that I won't read through Audible, but this one I am.
And is while you run or just all times of day?
A lot of it is while I'm running, but I'll listen to it, you know, when I'm getting ready. If I have little chores to do around the house that Andrea asked me to do, I'll listen to a book. anything that allows me to multitask and listen to a book, I'll do it.
Yep.
A good one that I'll tell you that I did over Thanksgiving that was awesome is I spent 3 days ice fishing, and I listened to, like, I don't know, two or three books during that time. That I'm talking good multitasking.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can imagine. So, I mean, that's what we're talking about, right? It's all about time. It's all about taking advantage of the hours of the day that you have. And so I got to ask this, because I ask a lot of people this question. Some people think I'm crazy for doing it. I used to listen to things, podcasts, books at one times, and then I was like, this is taking too long. So I went to 1.5. Most of the time now I'm going to 2x speed, and I keep up with it because I guess I'm used to it. What speed do you listen to books at?
You know, I was as high as 1.5, and certain books I'll go 1.5. Other books, I'll be at 1.25.
So okay.
I'm a little bit of a slow processor.
No, it's good. A lot of people are 1, and there's nothing wrong with it. If I listen to like an hour podcast, like this podcast, if I were to listen to it, it's nothing against you or even myself. I'm the one talking, but I'm going 2x speed. I'm like, I couldn't listen to myself talk that slow.
Yeah, and what's amazing is when you go to 1x speed, it's like, holy cow.
Yeah, it's like spit it out, man, right? It's so funny. That's great. All right. So if you were to look at your phone right now, what is the one app that is most important to you?
Evernote.
It would be
1, and I would say Audible is 2.
Yeah.
Those are the two that I spend a lot of time in.
Those are good ones. All right. So what is the one thing you would tell a soon-to-be or recent college graduate to focus on?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say so it would have to be career emphasized, right? Because they're finding a career is what I would guess their advice they would be seeking out. And my advice to those individuals would be, as they're seeking out a career and seeking out a company, is that they don't worry as much about the company that they're going to work for as they do about the mentor that is going to be in their life in that company. So who is it that's going to mentor them? Who's going to be their Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? And so that would be my best advice.
I love that. All right, so I know there's many, you've touched on some already, but if you could identify for this question one person that helped you get where you are today.
Well, we've talked a lot about professional endeavors, and so I would say Jeff Erickson. Jeff, I met when I was in college at Utah State. He's a very successful president of a financial planning company, and I worked for Jeff for, I think, 8 years. So I'd say much of the principles, in fact, that I've taught today, I learned from Jeff.
Okay. So you live in Salt Lake City, what is the best thing about living in Salt Lake City?
The absolute best thing about living in Salt Lake City is that I get to look at these beautiful mountains that I'm looking at right now every single day. It is awesome. So awesome to see these.
Yeah, you don't get that everywhere. I'm looking out my window, and North Carolina, don't get me wrong, is beautiful, and we're not that far from the mountains. But I think you guys, like it, and I think I've told this to you some time ago, but it seems like you have the best of everything. Like you have winter and summer. You have it all like baked into one, right?
It's a good place. It is.
Yeah, people love it. All right, so you're in Salt Lake City. You talk about college football. You got to watch the World Series. If you could pick one sports team that you could root for, what team is that?
Ooh, of course, the Utah State Aggies.
There you go. Yeah, and are they going bowling this year?
We're going bowling, baby.
Okay. Yeah.
Going to New Mexico.
Okay.
Got it done. Yep.
That's outstanding. And Utah State has done some good things. I mean, they've had some good
basketball
teams,
you know,
right?
They're making progress.
That's
they're
it.
Making progress.
I love it. The Utah State Aggies. That's great. All right, Brady, I have to give you have such great words of encouragement. You've given so many already, but I want to let you have the final words of encouragement and then also follow that up with how people should connect with you in social, email, or however you would like them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Final words of encouragement would just be reiterate these principles that I've taught and that have been taught to me. If you've listened to this entire podcast, my guess is that you have had an impression or an idea come to mind on a way that you can help somebody or a way that you can be better, which would ultimately be able to help somebody. My words of encouragement would be whatever that was that came to your mind, take action and follow that. And I promise that if you do, that you will witness miracles. I promise that. So the best way to be able to get a hold of me is I'm a LinkedIn junkie. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Send me a little note, and I promise I will respond. I respond to every single message I get on LinkedIn, and I want to be an advocate for you. So reach out, connect. Let me help you in any way that I can.
Brady, that's awesome. You are a LinkedIn junkie, and we do appreciate that. And I think, did we talk about what your favorite social media network is? Because it is LinkedIn, right? I mean, that's like your go-to spot.
Yeah. LinkedIn's my go-to. I've met so many wonderful people through LinkedIn and just had a lot of great experiences with it.
Yeah. Well, Brady, I thanked you before and I'll thank you again in the future, but we really do appreciate, you know, just even associating ourselves with you. I thank you for sharing your story on this podcast. I hope a lot of people, good people, get to listen to it. And like you just said, take action. So thank you for taking action with us today and spending the time to be on this podcast. And we really appreciate it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Brady, it was absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. From the inspiration he brings to everyone around him to the execution of his goals, Brady is an incredible example of true leadership. The perspectives he brings as a CEO and founder of the Rods Organization are now perspectives you as a business owner and entrepreneur can use for yourself. And for that, Brady, thank you. And for any individual looking to learn more about a career in financial services or how you can help with Rods, I would encourage you to reach out to Brady. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can contact me on Twitter at @Eric_Kaz or with the same name on Instagram, or you can find us at KazSource.com with links to us on the different social networks. Thank you for listening to our KazSource podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, Building and Protecting Your Business One Podcast at a Time. Until next time, we're out of here. A big thanks to Rods Racing for their support of this podcast and allowing us to contribute to their inspiring cause.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It's a big deal to us. We hope you found value in it. And if you did, we would be incredibly grateful if you gave us a review on iTunes. Remember to subscribe to this podcast and feel free to share it with anyone you know. More than anything, thank you again for listening. We appreciate it.